A longtime fixture and writer on radio's Howard Stern Show, Jackie the Joke Man Martling, will be in Latham on June 22nd for a show at 8 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to blazepricemedia.com. It is a great pleasure to welcome the very funny Jackie Martling to the program. Jackie, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It is my pleasure, and I'll start with my favorite joke, which we can do on the radio.
Excellent.
The wife says, "Get out! Get out! Get out!" And as her husband's walking out the door, she says, "I hope you die a slow, painful death." He turns around and says, "So now you want me to stay?"
And right, there you go.
People love jokes.
And that's...
People love jokes. They have to follow me on Twitter, at Jackie Martling, J-A-C-K-I-E-M-A-R-T-L-I-N-G. Every day at 4:20, you will get a joke. Plugs are over. Joe, it's nice to meet you. I haven't been up there in a long time. We performed at the Egg about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've done a few shows up there with Wolf in the morning, but it's been years, and I can't wait to come back.
It is. It's going to be great to have you back in the area. It's always great when you're to see you on stage. Since you left the Stern Show, have audiences changed? Not in number, but in sort of demeanor.
No, you know they. You know, at first when I left, I thought I was going to get yelled at and screamed at so much, and then I went out and nobody heckles. You know, once in a while. You know, well, people are always going, and doing my voice, you know. But there really is no, if you're asking if I'm getting abused or something, if somebody pays $20 or $30 or $40 for a ticket and they come out and yell and try and wreck the show, they're the idiot, you know.
Yeah.
And I think they would get stifled pretty quick. The audiences, yes, are much smaller because they don't have the exposure. But it's the same. You wouldn't believe my audiences because they play me so much on Sirius XM Raw Dog and so much on the Stern Show is repeats. That I have fans that are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. You know, I mean, you can look out in my crowd and see a guy. You know, I have a lot of people that come with their parents and a lot of people that come with their children. And, you know, like a guy sitting there, like a 50-year-old guy is sitting there with his 30-year-old daughter and they're both howling at the dirty jokes. It's kind of fun, but it's kind of mind-boggling at the same time, you know?
You started...
You know, because they come up to buy something or for an autograph, and I'm like, oh, nice, this is your wife? No, this is my daughter. Oh! You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's a family bonding experience, sure. I find it interesting of how you started because it is both comedy writing and also, of course, stand-up and joke-telling. For you, which was the original goal?
Well, neither. It's so weird. When I was like in third grade, I saw my cousin tell a dirty joke, and I saw how it just blew everybody away, and everybody was so entertained and so enthralled, and he was such a hero. I'm telling you, Joe, I've remembered every joke I've heard since then. That was like in 1956 in third grade. I remember every joke, clean, dirty, whatever. Since then, I went to Michigan State University and graduated as a mechanical engineer in 1971. I've always been a musician, and when I was 31 years old in 1979, I realized if I ever want to eat, I better do something else because I was so broke, and the only thing I knew was every joke in the world. I know more jokes than anybody in the world, literally. So I just started. I used to tell the jokes in my band, so I started doing the jokes on stage. And people laughed at every joke, so I made an LP because I had learned how to do that because I worked at a recording studio when I was a musician. So I put out an album, another album, another album. I started a dirty dialer joke that's still going to this day to promote our shows. We were doing shows on Long Island before there were comedy clubs in 1979.
Right.
And by the time 1982 rolled around, I had three comedy albums out. I was never headed for radio or for being a radio writer. They used to call my dial a joke on WBAB on Long Island, but that was just to promote the comedy shows. And somebody in Washington said, "Hey, this guy just got fired from DC 101 and he's going to WNBC in New York. You should send your stuff to him." So I sent my three comedy albums to Howard Stern. I didn't have any idea who he was. He called me up and said, "You're a lot of fun. Come on in and sit in on the show." At the end of the day, he said, "Man, you're a lot of fun. Come back next week." And I was there for 20 years. And that's how it worked. There was no plan. It was, Joe, I've gone through my life like it's a pinball game. Bing, bang, bing, bang. And what's crazy is I hardly ever did any kind of jokes on the show. I was writing on the fly, just lines and ideas. But my act is the oldest dirty jokes in the world. It's a complete dichotomy. It's just 180 degrees. It's very weird, but I just like to laugh. That's all.
When you were working with the Stern Show crew on a day-to-day basis, when it was going right, especially with you and Howard Stern, what were the ingredients that were in place to make that work?
It was just sheer fun. Fred was a genius with sound effects. Robin was Howard's partner. They bounce everything off of. Gary's the producer, in and out with ideas. And the microphones would go on at 6 o'clock, and Howard would start talking. And if I thought of something that he could say that would make it a little funnier, I'd write it down and put it in front of him, and he'd either say it or he wouldn't say it. And it was interesting every day for 15 years. The 15 years we were on in the mornings when I was on 5 days a week, it never got old. It was me and Howard and Robin and Fred, 5 days a week, 4 or 5 hours a day. And the last day I worked there was as much fun as the first day. It was just always fresh, always exciting. And, you know, it was he's just so spontaneous. Like, I mean, I would think of things on the fly, but you have to be as brilliant as he is to be able to incorporate. You know, imagine you're talking to me, and as you're talking to me, you're reading something, and you incorporate that into what you're saying. It just was... It was a magical, magical show, and it just, when it was working, people would be just flabbergasted by it when they were sitting there watching it happen. And it was just fun, you know?
For you then, because it was ultimately your decision not to continue, so...
Well, I asked for more money than they wanted to pay me, so I guess the answer to that would be yes.
Right. So at what point is it not, and I guess it's sort of... Another way of asking the question that I just asked, which is, you know, what ingredients were in place when it was working? What was there when it wasn't working, in the sense of when it wasn't fun for you?
It was never not fun. I mean, when they were all picking on me and it was 4-on-1, that was great. I was like the guy in the middle of the Chinese kung fu movie with the, you know, with, surrounded by people coming at him with swords, and I'm fending them off. You know, some of the stuff Howard used to say to insult me, I wrote. People can't even wrap their brain around that. Imagine I'm writing something horrible for him to say to me. You know what I mean? It was theater. It was never not fun. I mean, negotiations aren't a party, but everything on the air was always, always fun.
So when you think about it now and realizing that the show
And Joe, that is not a company line. I absolutely mean that.
Sure.
I absolutely mean that. It's a total joy. There was no unhappiness with the show being why I left. You know, there were weird situations, but it had nothing to do with the guts of the show, you know?
Do you ever have any regrets of that decision in leaving?
All day, every day.
Yeah.
No, of course. Yeah, you know what it is? I made my bed and I lied in it. You know, of course I sit here and say, geez, I wonder how rich I'd be right now and what my house look like. But I don't regret it. You know, I got off the show. I quit drinking. I have a million new friends. I've done a lot of stuff. I mean... You know, you wonder what would have happened and what wouldn't have happened, but you can't regret anything. You know, you make a decision, you know, do you regret getting married? No and yes. You know, do you regret getting divorced? No and yes. There's always factors. But it was the move I had to make, and I'm very glad I made it.
And then you have to think also of what it would have been like. I mean, we get you have a show on the network, so we get some sense of what that is like. But for you to be able to interact with that crew and be able to work the way Howard always wanted to work, which is uncensored.
Yeah, I never got a chance to do that.
Yeah.
No, but I'll tell you, it's funny because I was at Sirius before they got there. And I was on the verge of getting a pretty big job there. And they took it off the table because they said Howard was coming to Sirius. And I didn't think that was going to happen. I didn't think he would ever come to satellite radio because dancing around the rules was the whole show. But obviously they made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and he came, and the show, you know, flourished, of course. But, you know, the lure to that show coming to Sirius had to be the money. It wasn't, hey, we're going to get to be dirty, because it was always such a challenge, you know. People will say, you know, there's so many people on the radio, Joe. They call me up and they say, all right, we want to interview you on the radio, but be careful what you say. People forget that we were on terrestrial radio for 15 years. We weren't on satellite. We had to dance within the rules. I never made a mistake in 15 years, but people forget that. You know what I mean? I don't sit at the dinner table and curse at my grandmother. You know who you are and where you are. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. But yet there has to be some thought of whatever the motivation was for him to go, that if you were there, that the dynamic would be a little bit different, and I would think a little more freeing, because you would be able to do what you want and pretty much do much of the material that you do in the act.
You know, I really wonder, because not sitting there and being there, and I don't listen to the show, so I don't know how dirty or not dirty it is on a day-to-day basis. I mean, the freedom, like, obviously, when you walk along with your friends, you can curse as much as you want, but how much do you curse? You know, and it's like, it's not terribly entertaining, but the freedom to be able to talk, you know, it's funny how you can't even talk like a schoolyard kid on television, you know, so it's kind of a weird question, you know, like, I don't think I would be writing especially dirty things, but, you know, I think I really came in handy helping dance around the rules. You know, I don't know if I would have been as big an asset once the gloves were off, you know? Don't tell anybody I said that.
Well, what is it like? What do you think it is about us? What do you think it is about an audience that likes that type of humor, that likes the dirty joke, that likes to have that rapid style?
That makes people laugh. Humor, and, you know, talking about jokes and talking about humor, it makes you want to go watch paint dry. But jokes come from breaking tension, and the most tension is from poop and sex and filth and disgust. If you watch Johnny Carson's monologue, he would talk for 7 minutes about the economy, about the state of the world, what's new in Hollywood, and at the end of the 7 minutes, he would make an obscure penis reference, and the place would explode, because that's where the tension is, and that's where the big laughs are. If clean jokes got bigger laughs than dirty jokes, I'd be telling clean jokes. I don't tell dirty jokes because I want to be naughty or want to be a bad guy. I've been standing at the bar for 65 years telling people jokes. And when I tell you a joke, I want it to be like I punched you in the stomach. I want you to laugh. I want a reaction. And I'm going to get that reaction with a dirty joke or a really clever, clean joke. I don't really care. I'm an equal opportunity joke teller. But for the most part, you know, the off-color stuff is what's going to make people howl. And that's just what it is, you know, for whatever reason. People love dirty jokes. I always say there's two groups of people at every party. The people in the huddle telling filthy jokes, and the people that wish they could think of a dirty joke so they could get in the huddle.
So on that, leave us with a joke.
Okay. A guy goes in a library. He says, "Librarian, I need a book on suicide." She says, "Like hell, you won't bring it back." Here's one.
All right, bonus. Okay. Yes.
The FedEx guy knocks on the door. The door opens. There's a little kid. Little kid in his underwear. He's smoking a joint. In the other hand, he's got a half full bottle of Jack Daniels. And the FedEx guy says, "Kid, is your mother home?" The kid says, "What do you think?"
Jackie the Joke Man Martling on June 22nd at 8 o'clock at the Holiday Inn Express and Suites in Latham, New York. You can find out more information by going to jokeland.com, jokeland.com. Jackie, a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Again, jokeland.com for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.